Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
There aren't any Jasons 12 and under. That's a dead name.
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
How many kids do you hear, hey, Marky, it might be almost to the point of Ruth.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
You love that name so much, you don't even go by it.
On 100.5 ESPN.
If you call me Mark, I like my name. I like my name a lot.
The ESPN Wisconsin app.
Wilde and Tosh.
And ESPN Madison on YouTube.
It's Wilde and Tosh, isn't it?
This is Wilde and Tosh, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
The Victory Monday edition. Last Monday was a Game Day Monday edition. And then it was a Defeat Tuesday edition. The Packers win in New York, New Jersey. And they did not make it easy, but they got it done. What does it mean? Edition. And the preemptive polling. I don't know what the data shows at this juncture, but I'm guessing some of you feel mildly better and not worse. Most of you probably feel the same about the Green Bay Packers edition of Wilde and Tosh on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker. Streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you need on the all-new, all-redesigned, all-free, and all-customizable ESPN Wisconsin app. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay. Jesse Nelson is in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios from his undisclosed location in his Badgers track. He is the Packers Hall of Famer. He's Mark Tauscher. Tausch, good morning. How's it going for you?
I'm going good, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good story yesterday. Overcoming adversity. At one point, both your starting quarterback and your running back are in the visitor's locker room at MetLife Stadium being examined for injuries, and you find a way. Curious, your opening statement to Homer, since I was listening to Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love at the time. How do you feel about this dub as the Packers improve to 6-3-1? God, I hate that tie. Throws me off every time.
As I said in the opening statement, it was a no apologies game, and I thought yesterday was maybe one of Jordan Love's best games as a Green Bay Packer. Was yesterday. So I feel encouraged by what we saw. Obviously, still a lot of things that need to get better. But from an offensive standpoint, from Jordan Love in particular, he hung in there. He could have been Johnny Pouty with all the drops and all of the things that kind of went against him. But instead, he takes what Malik Willis, goes out and he throws the touchdown, comes back in, builds off of it, and I thought had just an absolutely fantastic game, delivering balls under duress, getting out of the pocket, doing things. I thought Jordan was just absolutely fantastic yesterday. And while a lot of the rest of the team was not, you won a road game after losing two games in kind of gut-wrenching fashion. I felt like yesterday was one of those games where bad teams and teams that aren't doing anything lose. They found a way to win. And you can say all you want about the Giants, and it's all fair. They had, I think the Giants probably played one of their better games yesterday. Mm-hmm. They didn't make a ton of mistakes. And the Green Bay Packers found a way to win playing up and down football, but mainly the biggest reason I am mostly optimistic is because I thought Jordan Love looked fantastic yesterday. And I think that's something to build off of going into what, you know, Bill Belichick and everybody used to always say, the season really starts on Thanksgiving if you're a contender. And the Green Bay Packers are a contender, and their meat of their schedule and where they're going to need Jordan to be at his best is coming right now.
I thought he was bad in one moment, and you know exactly the moment I'm going to say.
Actually,
stop lowering your shoulder, dude. Right? Like, Aaron Rodgers had to learn. Aaron Rodgers had to learn that your team needs you. Now, I don't know. After what you saw from Malik Willis, I certainly noticed some people who continue to insist that he would be a better option. I don't know how you still do that after the way the rest of the game went, but it certainly was right away when he went in for those seven plays. But I think, and Jordan acknowledged it, and Micah Parsons said it after the game. Like, okay, we appreciate what you're doing for us. Thank you for your service. But we need you, man. You can't do that sort of thing. And the good fortune of it not being severe enough for him to be sidelined for an extended period is great. But you don't think that that has to be reconsidered at all? Because that's my,
no,
literally,
I'm
that's my only criticism for him.
Yeah, I'm not upset about that. I want my quarterback and being a competitor. Now, should he have thrown the football away?
Yes.
And picked his spots? That, yeah, of course, but I'm not going to be, I'm going to be more Ted Lasso-y about it and look at all the positives rather than that one negative. Yeah, he needs to understand that concept of getting rid of the football and not, you know, not taking a bunch of big hits. But I just don't have a ton of negative things to say about Jordan Love today. And I love the fact his guys are dropping, everybody is dropping balls. I don't know how many drops officially there were, at least six or seven. At least Musgrave had two or three, and one that was thankfully a drop. But Dobbs had a couple, and it didn't deter him.
Right.
It didn't deter Jordan. I thought his mentality and his approach. I really appreciated what we saw from him yesterday.
Yeah, he was great, and that's exactly my point, is that if you're going to say that they need that Jordan Love for them to do what they want to do as they face the meat of their schedule, the one thing that can't happen is for him to get hurt.
Can they make the playoffs right now? If Jordan, let's say Jordan Love separated his shoulder yesterday, could they make the playoffs with Malik Willis 6-3-1 with this schedule left?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And I am a Malik Willis stan.
How
do you not love everything about him? But there's some big boy games. And I don't know if the Indianapolis and Tennessee game plans would work with him. He does add a different element. And I heard Pete Doherty ask Matt LaFleur about installing a package on putting him into the game because of that other element they add. Now, LaFleur said, you know, we consider everything, which is kind of his way of saying, no, I don't think we're actually going to do that. But, look, he is a legit weapon when he's in the game, and he is a fabulous number two quarterback. They should be thankful that they have him. Maybe they should even try and convince him to sign an extension the way Badgett did with the Chicago Bears. But again, my point is that if you are still negative on Jordan Love, which I still see people in my timeline from time to time who feel that way, you're just anti-Jordan Love. There's no winning you over. My point with that one negative
is that that's the kind of stuff that knocks you out of games. And if you get knocked out of games and you need him to get to where you want to go, you can't let yourself get knocked out of games. And thank heavens that that was not a dislocated shoulder or a fracture or a broken collarbone or an AC joint or anything else. He was able to come back after 7 snaps with that kinesio tape on his shoulder, and he was really, really good yesterday. There's no two ways about it. We will get to your positives and your negatives, 844-770-3776, 844-770-3776, as we do every Monday or every day after a game. Tausch, you asked a poll question that you had Jesse preemptively poll. Jesse, yep. What are the returns thus far? What was the question? And then I'm curious to hear if Tausch is surprised by what the returns have been so far.
Good morning, everybody. Yeah, our preemptive poll question on the Wilde and Tausch Twitter feed, as suggested by Old T yesterday. Do you feel better or worse about the Green Bay Packers after the 27-20 win over the New York Giants? And we're closing in on 500 votes. Tausch, how do you think the polling has shaken out so far?
I'm guessing worse is probably winning.
Worse is not winning, but it's close. Good. 55% of our fans who voted in this poll thus far feel better about the Green Bay Packers. 45% feel worse, based on the poll that was posted late last night.
Here's what I would think, and listening to, you know, I always stay for about an hour and 15 minutes post-game. We do our stuff, and one of the things that I was concerned about, my negative, is the Packers' run defense. Gave up way too much stuff yesterday. I believe our defense is championship caliber. And the biggest difference, our defense makes, we have closers. You get a lead, we close up shop this year. That's been pretty consistent in the games that we've been ahead. Now, you can look at some other games. I understand it's not perfect. We haven't been perfect. Obviously, the Cowboys game. And then I thought yesterday was one of the more disappointing defensive performances in the run game. We gave up a little bit more. I thought we had 3 or 4 opportunities to intercept Jameis. We ended up getting the one that we really needed to close it up. I do think the run game and what the Giants were able to do with, I don't know what number running back they're on, I thought that was a little bit more than they were able to possess the football and maintain drives on third down a little too easily yesterday. So that was my negative. There's other negatives, but I just have such a high standard. If this team's going to do what a lot of us want them to do, it is going to be the defense that's going to lead it. And I thought yesterday the offense actually bailed out the defense, especially late in that game. So just a lot. I think there's a lot of things to be concerned about, but there's also a few things that you really feel good about watching yesterday's game. That resilience, the toughness, the stick-to-itiveness, your quarterback play, Christian Watson, a lot of things to really feel good about. Malik Willis and Matt LaFleur, I thought all of those had really good afternoons yesterday.
844-770-3776. We'll start getting to your calls coming up. The one other negative, which I did not, again, get to hear the early portions of Green Bay game night in the afternoon, but Josh Jacobs has a knee injury. It is not season-ending. They don't believe further tests this morning. But it could keep him out for a few weeks. We'll see. He's probably going to be termed week to week by Matt LaFleur today, I would guess. I am curious, as Andrew in the ESPN Madison YouTube comments calls him an albatross that has been hung around Matt LaFleur's neck by Goody. Do you really think that they are going to be better off without Josh Jacobs in the lineup.
I'll tell you this. We had a special caller into our show last night in Big Cat who believes that. Homer willed it and started hedging. He started off saying exactly that point, Jason, that he thought Emmanuel Wilson, this isn't going to be something that hurts the offense. It actually will allow Matt LaFleur to do more of what he wants. And I just kept coming back to Josh Jacobs has been so productive and a bell cow for this offense. To say him not being in there is not going to hurt your offense. I was very surprised by the amount of fans that agreed with both Big Cat and Homer. I'm very surprised. I understand the play action under center stuff. I get that. I've been on that train for a while. But Josh Jacobs, when he's rolling, he forces defenses to do certain things. We saw it with Pittsburgh. I want him out on the field as soon as he can get back out there. I'm not joining that club of okay. Big Cat, Homer, and some other folks.
Yeah, so what's the – because, look, my counter to that is Matt LaFleur can do what he wants to do in the offensive design. Again, they have chosen to run the ball with him as frequently as they have because of the defenses they have faced. Now, I haven't gone back and looked at the all 22. I'm curious how the Giants played them. They played a lot of man coverage. I noticed that. But did they have their safeties back most of the day? Because when Emmanuel Wilson went in there, he had the touchdown run and not a whole lot else in the run game. But this idea that that Matt LaFleur feels compelled to give the ball to Josh Jacobs and that he freed Jordan Love because he didn't have to do that, I guess I don't understand the argument. My argument is their offensive line continues to struggle in the run blocking game. The one biggest run that Josh Jacobs had was technically a throw out to the right that was technically a run in the statistics. But this idea that, oh, he's only throwing the ball because Josh Jacobs isn't in there, I'm not sure I subscribe to Big Cat's theory. And Big Cat is very strongly opinionated on this. I'm aware. But I'm not quite sure why was he not an albatross around their neck last year when he was the engine that made them go and made Jordan Love's life easier by doing so. I don't understand it.
Yeah. It's a question for the people in that camp. I'm not in that camp, so I can't answer it.
We will get to your positives and negatives coming up, 844-770-3776, after Tausch tells us about Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Indeed. When it comes to your home, the smart play is to trust Gina Della and her team at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. And this month only, score a whole house of new energy-efficient Pella windows for $297 a month with 0% interest for up to 72 months. That's like a drive you can sustain for years, keeping your home comfortable thanks to the incredible defense played by Pella Windows, stopping all of those drafts. Don't wait. Schedule your free consultation today at PellaWI.com.
The argument rages on in the YouTube comments. Andrew is almost – are we sure that Andrew's not a burner account for Big Cat? If Big Cat had a burner account, what would his name be?
Galarraga. I think he'd call himself Galarraga.
That'd be clever.
PFT.
Yeah. Ask Tausch if we ever played a complete offensive game since Jacobs got here. The answer is no.
There's been way too many lulls. I'll give Andrew that. I don't know. Since Josh Jacobs has been here, have we had four consistently really good offensive quarters? It's a fair point. I can't think of one. Certainly not yesterday.
We'll get to your calls next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
extremely happy with the win. We definitely didn't make it easy on ourselves, but you know, bottom line is we overcame a lot of adversity and found a way, and that's sometimes what it takes in this league. And so we'll celebrate it tonight and move on to the Vikings tomorrow.
That is Matt LaFleur after yesterday's 27-20 win over the New York Giants, who did appear to get something of a bump from their coaching change, as Josh Jacobs and Keyshawn Nixon spoke about during the week, that the Raiders got when John Gruden was forced to resign, I guess was. I don't know, man. I don't remember what that was. And Rich Bisaccia took over. Tausch, what besides Jordan Love was your biggest positive?
The way we closed up shop and Micah Parsons again showing what he, you know, why he's here and what he brings to this team with the Strack at the end and the amount of pressure that he was able to give. That to me, I thought, and then obviously Christian Watson, you factor those two guys in. I love Christian Watson. I've been probably his biggest supporter from the jump on this show anyways. And is his what are you shaking your head about? You called him spindly and injury prone. I have always said his talent's great. You can't replace that talent. I don't know what you're shaking your head about. Go ahead, shake it. Shake it, because I'm right.
I think the line yesterday was another example. Polaroid picture. I don't think
you can shake it however you want.
No, okay. You've been very supportive of him. I believe I talked about him.
Much more than you. No offense. Well,
844-770-3776.
That catch he made, was that ball, was Malik Willis's throw to him? Did we get an answer on that? Because it didn't look like it.
No one mentioned that it wasn't intended for him. I don't think so.
If you watched that, it looked like it was a really bad decision by Malik Willis. It was not, that ball could have been intercepted. It was not, the result was great. But I thought the decision, and that was, I thought, such a great sign for all of us that are a big fan of nine to pluck that thing in that scenario. The other play, great awareness. His spatial awareness has not always been great, a la last week when balls are ricocheting off his head. But it certainly was on that touchdown throw. And then the hands and what he was able to do yesterday, big time. Big time.
Yeah, let's not forget, to Tausch's point about Parsons. He and Isaiah McDuffie also get the sack when the Giants decide to go on fourth down from the Packers 10. Instead of kicking the field goal to make it 19-16, they go for it, and he delivers another. He is a closer. He is Bruce Sutter. He is Raleigh Fingers. He is Dan Quisenberry.
Hey, Jason, can you help me out on this? Because Homer was very, I don't want to say combative yesterday, but he was very confrontational. And he said Micah Parsons is a horrible tackler. And I said, the only guy that's a Hall of Fame player.
Was he Colin Cowherd?
I don't know. But he said that, and I tried to say, well, how does he get all these sacks? And he had six tackles yesterday on top of a sack and a half. I said, the only Hall of Fame player that I've ever heard of that was said is a bad tackler is Deion. Yep. That was it. So then he spun it, and he tried to get me. You know, he was an ornery old goat yesterday. Micah Parsons, maybe he's not the greatest tackler that's out there, but he is not a bad tackler at all. Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. And if we're going to choose to criticize defensive players, why is it that Rashawn Gary is not more frequently a factor in the game?
Who, Rashawn Gary?
Yeah. Why is he not?
I don't know.
More frequently a factor.
He's had opportunities early,
and he's had games where he has been a factor. That's what's weird.
Yeah. So I think the Giants' offensive line was better than people anticipated. Their left tackle's a good player. He's a very good player. But it wasn't as if they were doubling Rashawn Gary a bunch yesterday. Jameis Winston was able to stand in a pretty clean pocket for a lot of the day yesterday. So that is definitely something It's a great question. I think you can get a spur up in Rashawn's boot a little bit here because he has not been as impactful as he was in the beginning of this season.
Yeah, he was
and
a factor.
If this team's going to do what they need to do, Rashawn Gary needs to up his impact plays. And I think getting Lucas Van Ness will help. But I also wonder how healthy is Devontae Wyatt because he hasn't been splish-splashy either, whereas in the past he was splish-splashy.
844-770-3776. Let's start with your calls. Let's go to Brian in Waukesha first. Brian, good morning. Welcome to Wildy and Tausch. How you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, quick concept for you. So I don't think there's any coach that I can think of, and maybe you guys can think of one that I'm missing, but that's more Jekyll and Hyde than Matt LaFleur. Because when it comes schematically and drawing up plays, I think he's as good as anybody. He gets his receivers open, they create separation, and it just it looks beautiful when you're looking at the All-22 and you're looking at what he's drawn up. But when it comes to actually in-game play calling, I feel like he's absolutely atrocious, and I don't think he's got a feel of the game, and I don't think he adjusts mid-game for what needs to be done in that moment. I think he sticks to his game plan almost to a fault. So it's frustrating because it's like, man, you drop some really good plays. You look like things are really humming, but you don't really understand the flow of the game to maximize or take advantage of those things so that your offense erupts and you're putting up 40 points a game, which I think this team is capable of. And I think from a scheme standpoint, I think this team should be putting up at least 30 points a game. But can you think of a coach that is more Jekyll and Hyde when it comes to the ability to draw plays and then the ability to execute them mid-game?
So, Brian, let me ask you this. If that's your opinion and you're entitled to it, then why when mm-hmm. The Athletic surveyed, I think, half of the NFL's defensive coordinators, Matt LaFleur was chosen as the sixth best play caller in the league?
Because I think it is the threat of the plays he draws up, the fact that he can get people so open that if the potential is there. I think that's 100% right. I think defensive coordinators going up against them have to plan for and look for so many different things, and there's so many different things that they can do to you. But I think mid-game, like if you're looking mid-game, what the moment calls for, what can be done to exploit the defense, I think he gets stuck in, well, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I was going to do, and he doesn't just look at the moment for what it is and maximize that opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it to be able to speak harshly critically of it.
Played it.
Tausch, I guess my question, based on Brian's question, is where is the line between we're going to do what we do, which certainly some coaches subscribe to, and being really adept at adjusting what you have planned to deal with what the defense is giving you?
So to me, what makes a really good coach is you have your core fundamentals that you're going to go to. You have your core plays that are non-negotiable. And it doesn't mean you have to run them a ton, but they're in. And the great coaches study matchups and pick at weaknesses and utilize your own strengths. And I do think there's times, and what really bothered me, and if you want to say, and Andrew could say, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde part of this, what drove me nuts last week was the fact that Philadelphia was eating LaFleur's lunch. They had their best corner finding where our first options were on a mm-hmm. real consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as if you put Quinyon Mitchell and you just put him on Christian Watson and said, all right, take him out of the game. No, you're throwing to Wicks, he's there. You're throwing to Dobbs, he's covering him. What I'm always looking for is, can you find matchups you like and how can you get into those where you can pick at them? And I do think Matt LaFleur, from an adjustment standpoint and other things, especially early in his career, I thought that was one of his weaker portions of his game. Now I think there's, if you're going to get after him, it's he's trying to balance letting Jordan Love rip and trying to run the football. And I think for the big cats and for the other folks that are on this, well, Josh Jacobs being out might be the best thing that happens to this offense. We're going to find out, because I'm sure Josh Jacobs, you know, if reports are correct, is going to miss a couple of weeks. And we'll see when Emmanuel Wilson's in there and Brooks is in there. It isn't going to be – Matt LaFleur is not going to feel like he needs to pound the football 30 times. Now, that might be what happens. I do think Matt LaFleur is a good play caller. I think he does find a way, but as far as adjusting and being able to, against the best of the best coordinators, I do think there's sometimes that he doesn't win those matchups. And, you know, players lose matchups sometimes too, but on the overarching aspect of coaching, I think Matt LaFleur does a pretty doggone good job on that.
844-770-3776. We'll get to more of your calls and texts on the Carbless Talk and Text Line. Carbless List is more coming up. Want to remind you, when it comes to matchups, David Gruber and Gruber Law Offices win those matchups all the time, and they make sure that you've been properly compensated if you've been injured in an accident. Make the call. One call, that's all. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. 6666, or go to the website gruber-law.com to find out more. More Wildy and Tausch straight ahead. Stick around.
Wildy and Tausch on 100.5 ESPN is brought to you by Everlight Solar. Save money, save the planet. Everlight Solar.
The Carbless Talk and Text Line is 844-770-3776. Eric, Andy, Jamon, Norm, Bill, we're working our way toward you. Still a few more open spots. Jesse waiting for your call. 844-770-3776. That is the Carbless Talk and Text Line. I do want everyone to answer Tausch's question that we preemptively polled. Although I, of course, will put the hedging option in there as well.
Sure.
Do you feel better?
You're going to say same, right?
Yeah, I don't feel I don't feel worse about them by any means. I mean, I guess if you make me choose and don't give me the hedge, I would say I feel slightly better. But to your point about the run defense, that was one thing that we were looking at this team saying that you could count on. And then they had the game against Carolina, and now they had this game. And in between, they didn't let Saquon Barkley get loose at all after last year letting him get loose twice. So I don't know what to expect from their run defense all of a sudden. But Micah Parsons comes through when you need him. Evan Williams with the interception that you predicted and also won the Steinhoffler for Jesse. Much respect to the 565 analytics folks who basically said to their boss, they gave him a big middle finger and they kept doing their job. Proud of
you. We decided we were going to put this out to our fans as a group. It's not just...
Yeah, we did. And there was a Twitter account called 565 Analytics that's unemployed that tweeted and said, I won.
I tend to agree with them.
So we're just going to let people run roughshod on our show. Is that what you're telling
me? No, we're leaving it up to the fans, and the fans said I won.
And they're fans.
They're fans of the show.
They're not employees of the show.
So we're just going to let Jeriad do all the determining on it. We're going to let it down to a one-person band.
Oh, no, there was also Matt also said that I won on Twitter. There were a few others that chimed in.
And by the way, I'm not arguing that you won. Like, I'm fine with that, but I want this. This is supposed to be crowdsourced now. We all agreed on that. After I fired 565 analysts.
I don't remember us agreeing on that.
And two of us didn't want them fired.
Yeah, well, yep. When you invent something, you also have some semblance of it. Anyways, I don't want to get into that. I am not going to acknowledge until we have the whole team in place to do that. And Jesse has to go through YouTube and everything else to find it. I'm a little nervous about Sean Ryan's snaps. A lot of inconsistency with the snaps yesterday.
It was raining. It was windy.
Oh, so it's fine. Okay. Just something to watch.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm concerned about it. I thought it threw Jordan off a few times. There's obviously a couple of plays that, you know, Sean Ryan's first time. I get all of that. It's just something to monitor. I'm not saying don't play him and anything else. It's just something to monitor. That's all. Ostrich. You put your head in the sand and say, oh, no, it's no big deal. It's windy out there. And it, I don't know. I wasn't there. It looked windy, but didn't seem like Jameis Winston had a ton of problems with snaps yesterday.
844-770-3776. Let's go to Eric in Green Bay. Eric, good morning. Do you feel better, worse, or the same about the Green Bay Packers after yesterday?
We'll lead off with, I feel about maybe on that scale, kind of where you're at. If I had to pick, you know, 55% better, 45% worse, I mean, we won, so we'll take that. But and that'll kind of go into the negatives a little bit, just kind of playing once again for the third straight week. Well, I shouldn't say third straight because you have Philly in there, but playing down to the opponent. And, you know, you have an opportunity with, you know, Jameis Winston in there. Again, probably the best third-string quarterback in the NFL, but they are banged up at cornerback, receiver, quarterback. You know, just an opportunity to kind of go on the road and make a statement and really show that you can right the ship. You know, we survived out there.
That's exactly what they did. They survived. I'm not saying that you should feel significantly better about them, but I thought there were some encouraging signs. I don't think you should feel worse about them. What was your biggest positive, Eric?
I would say the biggest positives for me were the 7 plays we got from Malik Willis. I think when you kind of look at the beginning of the script of the game, Jameis Winston wanted the ball, right? They wanted to.
I think they wanted the wind at the end, is just why they took the ball.
True. Nonetheless, they started off up 7-0. You know, we couldn't get that first drive going at the end. And then with the way that worked out, I think it's a completely different ball game if Malik Willis stalls or has a turnover, gives the Giants good field position, and now all of a sudden they're up 14-0 with, you know, a slightly banged up Jordan Love coming back. But just his ability to kind of keep the game back on course and give it back to us 7-6, I think was not 6-7, but close enough. I think that was great. And then I would say, too, the Chris Brooks, I know that Savion Williams catch at the end was a great catch and a game-saving one at that, but his blocking on there, I probably watched that replay maybe 10 times. He looked like an offensive lineman up there, giving Love enough time to get that heave off. So that was pretty great.
Yeah, and he's obviously going to have a larger role. I don't think they're going to have Marshawn Lloyd activated off of IR. They maybe will open the practice window for him, but based on what you've gotten from him since you drafted him, I don't think you can count on him helping you in the short term. But good call, Eric. We appreciate it. Look, I mean, the Savion Williams play, I'm curious, Tausch, how you viewed that, because that was an enormous play in the game from a guy who, as we talked about on Green Bay Game Day, basically wears a walking boot all week long and then takes it off to practice. Like, he's in the locker room all the time with it on. I don't know if it's an ankle or he was on the report as a foot originally. Whatever it is, you know, he got off the bus wearing it, and then he's out there active and making a big play and returning kickoffs. How big of is that? I mean, I'm not even sure if it's a sneaky play, but because it was a big play at the time and it sets up the touchdown to Watson. But how big is that moment from a guy that doesn't play a whole lot and kind of gets manufactured touches most of the time?
Yeah, I thought that was obviously it was a huge play. And if they don't connect on that, I think it was 3rd and 10 when they did that. Mm-hmm. You know, Eric just mentioned Chris Brooks's block. Kudos to him, because that was textbook. That was exactly how you draw it up. They decided to bring pressure. He picked it up, gave Jordan enough time to kind of decipher, and then, you know, was it a little bit of a lucky play? You could argue that, but Savion Williams went and found a way to go make a play. And when you do that, all of a sudden, coaches and players look at that and say, well, you made a play. Let's keep him out there. That's how you build that confidence in going and doing more, getting more opportunities. So, huge play in the game. And I think Savion Williams this is just kind of the start. I don't know how big his role is going to get, but certainly with some of the drops and some of the issues that the rest of that group had yesterday, we need better production, and we need more consistency. And I think you're seeing that at the tight end spot when you look at the snap count. Musgrave ended up with the least amount of snaps of any of the tight ends that that played a ton yesterday. I think the Musgrave experiment, unless someone gets hurt, he's going to get limited opportunities. And I'm going to tell you this, he best take advantage. I'm guessing it's going to be more going down the field. And any inline stuff, I think Musgrave, to take a little bit of Hamilton, I think he lost his – he did not take advantage of his shot. How does that song go, Jason, that you love singing?
I will not throw away my shots. I will not throw away my shot. John Fitzpatrick played 35 snaps. Josh Wiley played 20. I played 19. My shot has been thrown away. Yeah.
He threw a shot away. And that doesn't mean it's dead and over, but certainly coaches will tell you how they feel about you by playing and what moments they're out there. And in the second half, he wasn't out there much. So that is what it is. Take that, put that play to Savion Williams. If they don't connect on that, I don't think they win that game yesterday. That's how big that play was.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Third and 10 is huge. I understand that Goody has done a lot of really good things, and Tucker Kraft is a phenomenal draft pick who was on his way to being a star in this league, and I'm sure will be when he gets healthy again. But they took Luke Musgrave. He played two games his last year at Oregon State, and for all the buzz that we had the first eight games or so of his career, I understand he's had injuries, but man, oh man, he's healthy now. And if you can't catch the ball and you can't stretch the field and you're a tight end who doesn't block effectively, what are you bringing? And that's how you end up playing the fewest.
Maybe he's fun. He might be a fun guy. Locker room guy.
Let's get one more call before the break.
Obviously, the fumble, how he fumbled the football. Like, there was – you can't make those mistakes, especially now. It's time. Like, grow up, right? I've said that about some of these players, and this was, you know, this team as a unit. Musgrave, you don't get a lot of these opportunities, man. When you have injuries and you've had somebody kind of pass you by, you get these opportunities, and you either take it and run with it, or you become a journeyman, and you scramble and to fight to stay on rosters. And even with Musgrave's pedigree and his talent, doesn't mean he can't flip this switch, but that switch, he's running out of current.
Let's get to one more call before the break. 844-770-3776. That is the Carbless Talk and Text line. Liz is more. I don't know if this guy's calling to discuss the Packers or to have a conversation with Tausch about blackjack strategery.
Oh boy.
Because that's what often happens when he does call. It is Blackjack Andy in Madison. Andy, good morning. How are you? Do you feel better, worse, or the same about the Packers after yesterday?
Well, hi, guys. Thank you very much. I feel better, and that's because Matt LaFleur has been freed of the albatross that Brian Gutekunst tied around his neck.
Oh! Yes. Are you the same Andy in the YouTube comments?
I am. Guilty as charged.
Way to use albatross to tip me off. Good work.
Yeah, so anyway, I don't want to sound prisoner of the moment on this. I've been actually saying this for a long time and been chastised for quite some time as well. So
you and
what
Gabe,
I want to do is read
you and
on
Gabe,
the radio.
You guys should get together and play some blackjack together because you and Gabe feel the same way.
No, I mean, and so I want to read actually a text that didn't make it to the air from back in February of 2025. And then I want to put you under the spotlight, Jason Wilde, and see if I can, you know, maybe ask you, interrogate you a little bit about the situation.
Sure.
But basically, this is what I wrote.
Flip your little light on. Jason, put that little spotlight you got on.
I'm allowing the cornerstone of the Packers offense to walk away over $1 million in order to pay a very good player $12 million a year, even though said player can't take a handoff from under center, which is a cornerstone of Matt LaFleur's offense. Give the head coach some Coors Light and Ortitos, and he'll tell you flat out, I want Aaron Jones back. I never asked for Josh Jacobs. I was not consulted. The fact that the GM gave LaFleur a square peg hasn't been covered at all. This is dysfunction at the top. Jacobs is a great player who has single-handedly, along with the Packers GM, turned a formerly powerhouse offense into a disaster. So, Jason, I won't ask you flat out if you know, because I can understand how that could be an uncomfortable situation. But do you think Goody consulted Matt LaFleur on the acquisition of Josh Jacobs?
No, I do not.
Whoa.
You do not think he consulted him? Okay. So what? I don't think so either. Now, let me ask you this. Of the three Packers lead backs on the team right now.
Now, let me interrupt you for a second. Let me interrupt you for a second, then I'll let you finish. Yes. Seems to me that if you recall how that played out, and if you remember how we felt with the excitement, kind of like the Sam Decker era with the Bucks, the excitement we felt, I think this lasted a little bit longer than the half hour that Sam was a Buck before he was subsequently retraded. But that happened really quickly. And we thought for a moment that they were going to have Jacobs and Aaron Jones on the team. The general manager had said he would absolutely be back. And then it turned out not so much when they didn't reach an accord. Now, I don't know if Goody was secretly hoping that Aaron Jones would turn down the offer, which was much lower than I think Aaron Jones was expecting, if you recall correctly. And he got, I believe, $7 million on his one-year deal from the Vikings, who then re-upped him after the season. But I wonder if he had the Josh Jacobs thing in his back pocket. Do I think he told Matt LaFleur that was their backup plan and that they were interested in him? Sure. I don't question that. I'm not saying they didn't communicate. But do you think Matt LaFleur said, no, Goody, I don't want him. He likes the ball out of the shotgun, or he likes duo blocking schemes or whatever it is? I don't think that. I don't know that. That is my somewhat educated guess. But no, I don't tend to agree with the concept that, Goody went to LaFleur and said, hey, how would you feel about getting Josh Jacobs instead of Aaron Jones? And he said, that sounds awesome. Now, Andy, the floor is yours again.
So so when the Packers had all of their success on offense, when they made the great run, when they started to let it rip and you know, all gas, no break, and they let Jordan Love turn them loose, the running back was Aaron Jones. Which running back on the Packers offense least resembles Aaron Jones in every way possible?
I think I'm supposed to say Josh Jacobs here.
You are. Okay. Good job. Thank you for pulling me out of there. And now, which running back of the three on the roster most resembles Aaron Jones from a body type, from explosivity or explosiveness, for the ability to pick up blocks? Which guy most resembles Aaron Jones?
Marshawn Lloyd.
One that is active and that can play. Chris Brooks, man. Come on.
No, get out of here.
Hey, no, I want to ask you, Wildy, you've seen him. Does he not move a little bit like Amon Green to you? I don't understand. Okay, so
wait a minute. Is he Aaron Brooks? Is he Aaron Jones? Chris Brooks? Is he Amon Green? Is he Dorsey Levens? Who is he?
No, I'm saying he moves like Amon Green. He can catch the ball. He can pick up blocks. I wanted to ask you, you know, what's the deal? How come he hasn't seen more opportunities? Because he's been on the roster a long time. Has he struggled with the playbook? Has he blown assignments?
No, I think they've made him a fullback is what they've done with him. I think that's what they've done with him. They've morphed him into a fullback.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy has got a lot of potential. I think he could run. I think hopefully he gets a couple of series where it's not just one carry, because he had one carry for 8 yards yesterday and he kind of tripped on his own feet, which tends to happen when you don't get the ball very often. But the NFL is full of running backs that have been Aaron Stecker, right? Ashwaubenon High School graduate.
Indeed.
Great career, mm-hmm. Playing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, New Orleans Saints. I went through Aaron Stecker's career. He carried the ball only 20 times in his career, twice. You know what he did in those two games where he got the ball 20 times? He went 20 for 100 and he went 22 for 95 with two TDs. This guy had an 8 or 9 year career, sat on the bench as a backup. Let's talk about Duwan Harris. Remember Duwan, used car salesman?
Yeah, the used car salesman, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Scored a touchdown in the playoff game against San Francisco, a defense that nobody could penetrate, made their safety miss. It was a beautiful. Anyway, free Chris Brooks. Give him a chance. I think he's like the right body type. He can do everything that this offense needs to do. Maybe he's not any of the guys that I'm talking about, but I believe the guy deserves a look. We know what Emmanuel Wilson is. We know kind of what he's capable of. And
he's a lot like Amon Green.
I like him. Hey, I'm telling you, he moves like Amon. He's got that upright sort of stand up straight. He looks just like a man. Put him side by side. Jesse, maybe you can put a couple clips together.
Andy, guys, come on, Jesse, get to that.
Yeah. Actually getting a carry, which doesn't happen very often. But
Andy, thanks for the call. Here's my critique of Andy's call. He had me backed into a corner pretty good. And then he decided to make it about getting Chris Brooks more involved, and I think that that undercut what he had accomplished. Because I think he had made some pretty hard for me to dispute points about the fit that Aaron Jones was for the running scheme that they like to run. We talked about it last year. Blue would point it out all the time that there was so much more duo blocking than there had been previously before Josh Jacobs got there. I'm not sure that I fully agree with the shotgun handoff thing in terms of Josh Jacobs. I think that he is capable of that, and I do think that some of that should go on Matt LaFleur's shoulders of, hey, I know what you prefer, but for our offense to function as well as it can, I need to do more stuff under center. I think you can handle this. You are an elite back, Josh, and we're going to do this. I think there's that conversation. I don't know if that's occurred or not, but I think Andy made some good points. And next week, we'll be sitting here on Monday talking about Chris Brooks's 22-carry, 95-yard, 2-touchdown Aaron Stecker-like performance, or maybe we won't.
So for everybody that, and you shocked me there with the Goody didn't, talk with his head coach about that.
That's just my opinion. Surprising. I don't know that for certain.
Oh, I thought you were. I thought that was reported, Wildy.
Quite literally said that is a semi-educated guess. Yeah.
You said no. But the interesting part of that is, and for everybody that wants to, Goody, Aaron Jones missed a lot of ball since he's went over to the Vikings. He's missed a lot of games. Those are just the facts. He's not been able to stay healthy on a consistent basis. When Aaron Jones is right, what we saw, and when you want to look at the consistency and where this offense has last been, where you felt awesome about him from Q1 to Q4, it was the back end of that 23 season with Aaron Jones. That I can't argue.
Aaron Jones, just for factual accuracy, Aaron Jones played in all 17 games last year for the Vikings. He had 1,138 rushing yards. He averaged 4.5 yards a carry for them. This year he's played 6 games. I think the Vikings have played 10 or 11, so he has missed time this year. But last year he did not miss a game.
You're telling me he didn't miss time last season at all?
Pro Football Reference right here, 17 games last season. He also played 17 games in the 2022 season for the Packers, played 11 games. In the 2023 season, that was when he came back from the hamstring injury and was so good down the stretch. But I do think that Aaron Jones, and again, one of my guys who I like, so maybe I'm biased, but here are his career game numbers after 12 games his first two seasons. 16, 14, 15, 17, 11, 17, and 6. Now, if you want to make the argument that he has left some games with injuries and wasn't able to finish them, I don't think I can dispute that. But I don't think he's missed nearly as many games as people accuse him of missing.
It just feels like, and again, you can play 17 games. I was wrong. It feels like he's missed a lot of time with the Minnesota Vikings. And has he been the impact player that the Vikings hoped they got when he went up there? I would argue he hasn't.
He ran for 1,100 yards last year.
Okay.
He last caught 50, year, I'm talking, he also caught 15. He caught 51 passes last year.
I'm talking this season, Jason.
You said since he got
last
there.
Year, I was wrong on how many games he missed last year. Has he been the impactful guy this season that I think the Minnesota Vikings expected? I don't know. Maybe I have not. We have not played the Vikings yet. Maybe he will ball out this weekend. Because I can tell you this, that storyline is going to be everywhere this week. You best believe that. And maybe it'll be the Aaron Jones week. Everybody loves Aaron Jones. He is a great dude. Great Green Bay Packer. He's a Packer Hall of Famer. He is one of the best running backs. And I would have loved to have seen him with Josh Jacobs in Green Bay. It's not the road they went down. And I'd argue Josh Jacobs has been everything that you'd have hoped for when they've signed him. Now he's going to miss some time, unfortunately. How much, we don't know. But I don't think I can get on board with saying that that was the wrong decision, which is, in essence, what Andy is saying.
Tell us about American Family Insurance.
Badger fans, join me and my wife, Sarah, as we've teamed up again with American Family Insurance to raise funds towards the American Family Children's Hospital through a virtual toy drive. All donations will go towards therapeutic supplies and toys that help thousands of children and families across the country. Plus, American Family Insurance will match every dollar donated all the way up to $50,000 through the end of this calendar year. Visit amfamkids.org. Again, amfamkids.org to donate today.
We will get to a couple more calls as we still have one segment left in the 9 o'clock hour. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
Let's talk at text line 844-770-3776, and then we will get to more of your calls on the other side of the top of the hour. Let's go down to Dallas, talk to Jamon. Jamon, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Well, good. How you guys doing?
Well, you tell me, because I'm getting the sense, and I'm checking out the YouTube commentary here, and Dr. Denver Dan feels like there is too much negativity after a game that the Packers won. Where do you stand?
Definitely how I stand. Too much negativity. That's a good game by the Packers yesterday. I think a lot of people missed the interceptions that were dropped. I think if we catch a few of those interceptions, this is a blowout game. So, I mean, I'm impressed with the team. There are a few things we can clean up. But, I mean, the drops is one of the things that we can clean up. I'm not sure if everybody needs – all the skilled guys probably should be on a jug machine trying to catch a ball.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean,
both sides of the ball.
Offense, everybody was – both mm-hmm. sides. It's, yep. It was ridiculous. But, yeah, so I'm not too shabby about it. It's a win. You know, Green Bay finds a way to win these games, and that's what it comes down to. So, go, Pego. So, with the positive, I got too many of them. Malik Willis coming in, being able to lead the team down the field, score a touchdown. Beautiful sight. Good thing to see. And when you know you back up and come in and get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many positives in the game, though. Have a few negatives. We're getting off the field for the defense. A few times where, like, you know, guys are behind us, chains, and we're giving up the big plays, giving them the first downs, and the plays that we're thinking, like, oh, okay, now Green Bay finally gets a chance to get the stops or get a good lead. And second and long or third and long, we give up the long play, and it kind of was getting repetitive last night. I think they got maybe three or four fourth down conversions yesterday. So just kind of getting off the field has been a key thing, actually, for the defense for the past few weeks.
Great point, Jamon, about the fourth down. Now, I mentioned earlier, and thanks for the call. We always appreciate you. I mentioned earlier the big play from Micah Parsons and Isaiah McDuffie with the sack on fourth down on the 4th and 3 from the Packers 10, which obviously was a huge play. But the other three times that the Giants went for it on fourth down, they got it. And those were obviously enormous conversions by them. The Packers held them, and they weren't bad on third down either.
The Giants were 7 of 14. They were 50%. So not only did they have seven third downs where they did get the stop, but then the Giants got three of those seven on fourth down. So, yeah, look, I'm not saying, and Tausch, I don't feel like we've been overly negative personally, but I'm not saying that there weren't things to be troubled by, right? We talked about the run defense. Jamon makes a good point about third and fourth down and getting off the field. I also think the dropped intercept, like, you know, my Steinhoffel sleeper of the week, Carrington Valentine, had two, like, in a three-play span that he dropped. Yeah. Now, one of them, I think, he got run into by McKinney. But the bottom line is that, you know, I understand these guys are corners and not wide receivers for a reason, unless, of course, your name is Bo Melton, then you're both. But you can't drop those. If you're at the bottom of the league, only ahead of the Jets in terms of takeaways, then when you get some thrown to you, you said going into the game, McKinney said it, Jameis is going to give us some. He did. You didn't catch him until the last one from Evan Williams. We will get to more of your calls at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, but we can't do that until Tausch tells us about Tito's.
Tito's Handmade Vodka. It's always my go-to. It's made in Austin, Texas, the first legal distillery in the state. Tito's is six times distilled for a clean, smooth finish, and it's naturally gluten-free. That means it mixes with about anything, from a spicy Bloody Mary on game day to the classic vodka tonic while you're out flipping burgers or whatever you like to do. And you know what? Tito's isn't just about great drinks. They also give back in a big way, partnering with nonprofits and doing real good out in the communities across the country, especially for our four-legged friends. So the next time you're raising a glass, make sure it's Tito's Handmade Vodka, crafted to be savored responsibly.
The 10 o'clock hour, was Brian Bulaga here and I missed it? Kicks off in 2 minutes, so stick around.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.